Hi everybody, it's Oshi. Welcome back to No Killing Goblins, and I'm here again with my wonderful co-host who's returned from his banishment to wherever the hell he was before.
Hey everybody, and yeah, I was down at Decepticon. It's a great social deception, werewolf, some other games, gaming convention. It's every year down in Atlanta. If you're anywhere in the area and you like those kinds of games, check it out. They also do monthly big werewolf circles down there.
It's been a interesting week for me. A lot of stuff I can't talk about. How's your week been during this?
My week has been pretty good. And on the subject of something that happened this week, I am kind of taking every chance I can get to talk just a tiny bit about one of my favorite online authors. He does not really do web serials exactly. He does more traditional book type books or a series of short stories and also some web serial stuff, but it's Eric Burns White. People should definitely check him out if you like superhero stuff, particularly Interviewing Leather. It's about a reporter who gets kidnapped by a supervillain on what he thinks is going to be a quick interview and finds out he will have to stay the week. It's really good, it's really fun. He's going through a tough time right now, and I'm using what little I can do to try and help the guy out.
You could have just told me and I would have bought. No, I have no money. I'll see what I can do and I will definitely be reading it.
The stuff is free and it's worth checking out, and I mean, if you like it, just pass on the word.
I will definitely do that. I hope you guys who are listening to us, hopefully you'll check it out too. Give it a look. Dragonus has some fairly good taste on occasion. Dragonus has been obsessed with Elden Ring, so has everybody else. Like, I haven't been able to talk to some of the people that I enjoy talking to because they've been glued to this game. Their butts have been glued to this game.
As we speak, Elden Ring has been out for roughly 1 week and 2-ish days. So 9 days, and I'm 69 and a half hours in. Nice. Yeah. So it's a good game. Very good game. Yes, good game. Just not for everyone. It's a Souls-like. They can be kind of punishing. They have a specific way they want you to interact with their plot, and it's a lot of inference and item descriptions and putting together a puzzle of the past with the little information that you have. Pick your own engagement kind of a thing. But it's got more plot than some of the other ones have. It's one of the best open worlds that has ever been designed. They did not take this game being open world as an excuse to get lazy or do copy-paste stuff. Every set of enemies feels uniquely and specifically placed. Every side dungeon is unique and different. Even if they follow similar themes, each one has its own depth to it, and oh god, depth. This map is huge. Like, for all of this careful detail that went into enemy placement and dungeon design, the fact that this map is so big astounds me. This is like everything Ubisoft open world games aren't, especially good.
That sounds amazing. I wish I could afford slash take the time to actually dig into it. I also have a terrible computer. I'm jealous that you have a computer that can manage to actually play it at a reasonable rate.
Barely.
Barely is better than not, which is me for right now. So we have been getting emails. Thank you to the people who are sending emails. We're gonna read a couple of them in a little bit, but if you send us emails, generally it'll takes a we're ahead a couple of weeks in the recording cycle so that the episodes are lag time. So if it seems like we're not reading, we are. We're reading them. I'm responding to them. We're getting to them. So speaking of said emails, you want to read Christina's?
Yes, I will gladly. So this was from Christina. Hi guys, I just finished listening to episode 16, and I have to say that it felt like a really funny personal attack. Seriously, Oshi? Quote, "All I can say is if you're depressed, get help. If you're anxious or have social anxiety, just let me tell you, get help, because you will save yourself years of being Ryoka." End quote. That hurt, and that was hilarious. Sometimes I feel like I'm the one reader who's always loved Ryoka. Yeah, they talk a little bit about when they started reading and getting to some more personal stuff. I don't know what they do or don't want us to read on air. I just wanted to get that one funny quote bit in. Either way, I started reading it and I couldn't stand Erin for the longest time. When Ryoka was introduced, I really liked her. She was a nice break from Erin, and I already saw a bit of myself in her. I'll get help. That inner voice felt so familiar, I guess I could understand or at least sympathize with her. And at the time, I was so confused by comments saying they disliked the character. I thought it was a good representation of how it is to have some mental health issues. And I kept waiting for a moment that would make some of the readers change their minds. But then Pirate wrote that fight with Yvonne and Calruse, and yeah, I immediately thought Pirate wanted her to be hated. So when did you guys start getting excited about her chapters? I always liked her character, so I can't remember when she started being liked by everyone else. Keep up the good work. I always have fun listening to the podcast. Christina Itinerant Fox, thank you so much for enjoying and for writing in.
Thank you so much for the email. And yes, it was meant to hurt. Thank you that you appreciated my attempt at humor. It really, I didn't hate Ryoka because of Ryoka. I hated Ryoka because of the exact same reason you loved her. I saw a lot of myself in her and a lot of my youth in her, a lot of what I was in her. And it made me, and I'm a self-hating gay, so it's like reflecting back on yourself and you're cringing inside and you hate yourself. It's got really complicated. I don't think I started loving. I don't think I ever disliked Ryoka in that way, even after the Kalaruz fight. I always thought this is just typical behavior. Please, poor, help someone, help the poor girl. I knew it wasn't gonna happen, but yeah, I didn't start liking Ryoka, ever, because for me, Ryoka wasn't someone I liked or disliked. She was a fascinating character with a lot of characteristics and a lot of like isekai traits that were reflective of her being that person. Like, Pirate structured her to be hated. Yeah, it really does feel like Pirate structured her to be hated. And part of that was because she was like an isekai protagonist. She's rich, she got problems, she's dropped off the world, she's got skills and knowledge, and the representation was she knew stuff. She was gonna change the universe with her paranoia and
Oh, I'll say one thing specifically about her and her standard isekai feeliness. Oh boy, does trapped in another world, but I refuse to engage with the class system not sound like a light novel name. I've said it out loud. Somebody's typing it and publishing it as we speak.
But yes, that kind of deconstruction was fascinating. I did enjoy Ryoka as a construct more than as a personality because of my personal issues with her. Not because I thought she was a bad character or anything like that.
I'm in a slightly different direction with that. Don't get me wrong, I think she is a fascinating character. I have really enjoyed picking apart and talking about her and thinking about her differently in this more careful reread we've been doing. And I can't talk about like specifics for why, but I didn't start really like I did not like Ryoka much as a person at this point in the story. Not long from where we're at now, I'm just going to start disliking her as a character, and I don't get excited for a long time. And that's just me, and you know, everybody's got characters they like or don't. I mean, just say the word floss when Oshi's in a room. Do
I hate you.
it. Exactly.
Why do you poke me? Why? Why, Dragon?
It's a good example, right? Like this one of the things I love about Wandering In is that there are so many characters that we can explore, and like, you know, even if there's an arc or a chapter with a character you're less hot on, you know that there's one that's just gonna completely blow you away when it comes to your turn for a certain very good boy to finally get his chapters coming up.
Okay, thank you so much, Christina. I'll reiterate what Dragna said. I really love when people send mail, and this is like one of those good emails, you know, when someone thinks about things before they sent you. And that consideration, I'm telling you, my heart right now, just thank you so much. Speaking of the other side, we have Seth, who also sent us an email. Seth says, responding to your call for email, here's mine. Number one. Yes, having a topic of discussion or question at the end probably would encourage responses. Number two, criticism. Can you please equalize speaker or mic volumes? It is annoying to change volumes to hear parts of the broadcast when listening with headphones, particularly if the next speaker then exclaims something loudly in my ears. Number three, lewdness. The way for Kershaya.
Oh.
Fuck you, Dragonus, you've infected me. The way for Kurt.
Well, okay, so two things. One, they definitely have slightly, I think, misspelled the name there. And two, I think we're about two episodes away from really being able to talk about this third comment. We should put a pin in it and bring it up then.
To the folks who were discussing and have commented to us about the audio quality and issues, we're trying our best. We're like the lowest ladder in terms of podcasting equipment. Just some mics, Discord, and just trying to get it to work. Oftentimes, what can happen is that our audio sounds good when we're listening to it in the audio editing software, and then when we reproduce it as an MP3. But then it goes through compression cycles when it gets uploaded and then distributed to the various sites, especially Spotify for some reason has problems with like weird audio leveling.
Also, specifics help. Like, say, we've had several people let us know I consistently come in louder than Oshi, so we've been lowering my volume, raising Oshi's a little. If you notice anything weird, letting us know specifically, who came in weird when, helps us narrow it down.
Speaking to the discussion topics, we'll think of something by the end of this episode, Dragonus, and we'll ask everybody. Let's see what we can get.
I've got something in mind. And with that in mind, let's jump right in. I missed last week because I was at that convention, but I think we're starting 212 today, right?
Yep, the 12th chapter of the second volume of Wandering Inn, where we start off with the lovely Lady Magnolia pillorying Terriark.
Oh, yeah.
For those who don't know what pillorying means, she's fucking with him.
I'm not 100% certain if that's the correct pronunciation, but I'll leave it.
Oh, come on. I'm pretty sure it's correct. Now I'm gonna have to go to Google. You talk, I'll go to Google.
All right, yeah, no, she is tearing him a new one because despite being Terriark and, everything that entails, he just can't keep track of Ryoka. And she is just like mocking him mercilessly in that really close way that you get with people who have that closeness, that I still to this day am not 100% certain exactly what's going on there. I'm not exactly certain what's going on there, but they clearly have a very close friendship relationship, something. And actually, this is something that struck me early on in a very funny, lighthearted chapter, is when he says he loved her for it, but she was growing older, something neither he nor she could escape. And I'm like, wow, that's a deep thought. And it's one that I think comes up more and more with certain characters like Terry over time, that like it hangs over this otherwise very funny scene to me.
Pirate is pretty explicit about the burden that Terriark takes on. There's a line right after that where Terriark says, Terriark, it was his nature, and Terriark felt it weigh more heavily whenever he found someone like Magnolia, a rare mortal with a spark. It was their nature. They brought light and passion to his life, but like sparks and fireflies, they died all too quickly. And it's the establishing of the fact that first, Terriark's fucking old. And old people tend to collect memories and regrets, and most importantly, friends who die. But Terriark is both comedic here, and there is a sense of sadness to the comedy too. This is such a pirate thing to do, to deliver to us important bits of information and then mask it with comedy or drama or something. And you almost miss it, but you don't. I love that.
Yeah, and on the subject of just important things, it's really subtle to me the reason why they could not scry Ryoka, and I think it's implied but not quite stated here, so I'll not say it out loud, but.
The implication, the line that kind of had me jumping out, is when Terriark said there's like a trick to her name. She can't lie. She doesn't have a, like, Magnolia straight up says, she can't lie, she doesn't have any skills, how the hell is she could she fuck with you? And he's like, there's gotta be a trick to her name. There's a trick. I've been tricked.
It's such a great little trick. I think that it says fascinating little things. It's an interesting character moment that nobody thinks of it. It's an interesting little like say thing slipped into it that the magic works that way. It's just cool. And on the subject of, magic and, all of the different ways you can pronounce it, with however many exclamation points or, lack thereof there is, we have a distinctly magical, in some ways, character coming up, Octavia.
Oh my God, yeah.
And Garia, who's legit magical.
You and your obsession with the okay.
Garia is such a good girl.
Okay, calm down. I know you're half masked.
It's not a sex thing, Christ Oshi. Not everybody like you is on 24/7 hornium.
It's not a horny thing. Half masked is it could be used as an allusion to being excited about something. The first section ends on probably the most hilarious note. Of Terioc being pompous and Magnolia are bickering, and then he notices that someone's coming to his I'm sorry, place of residence. He realizes it's Ryoka. He ends the section on, "What is that smell?" And we get to find out what the smell is. And oh, it's a smell. I'm still laughing the fuck off on Pirate's solution for how Ryoka gets to the high passes.
I was just laughing reading through like a few lines here because it's a funny setup with Garia and Ryoka just trying to interact with Octavia and stay sane, and where they're getting to money passing, it's like 80 gold pieces, money, security, freedom. I never had to worry about that back home. I wasn't rich. The denial sensor kicks into gear. It's no, I was rich. I was really rich. Ah, Ryoka. But this chapter has less Octavia in it than I remembered.
No, Octavia is represented from an outsider's perspective. Garia and ultimately Ryoka's interaction with her are what frame how we see Octavia. And let's not forget Ryoka bad with people. So she doesn't necessarily notice the things that she might. Now, like Octavia starts talking a lot about what potions are available and what things are. We don't really get a lot of like concrete information, but this is the first string person that we meet, right? She talks about how a string person works. I think this was fascinating for me when I first read it because it was the first truly like alien race, I want to say, yes? Alien species, let's say.
I disagree. So as weird as they are, they still make sense to me in a way. If I had to think of a species I think of as being really alien. Okay, so the first thought is actually just like Omega nuclear level like radioactive spoilers I can't say out loud. And after that, lizard people, I think, are probably what feel the most alien to me, and that's only when you get to their more weird evolved forms.
But the thing for me, the reason I don't think we even mentioned lizard folk yet because it's there. Have they been in the chapters yet?
No, I think the most we've heard about lizard folk is Drake's talking mad shit about them.
Here's the lowdown on why I was like the string folk are the most alien because it was up until that point the most unique species that Pirate introduced because everything else had some basis on some kind of folklore or anything. I mean, string people do have a basis in real world. Obviously, they're people made out of string. There's plenty of scary stuff about that everywhere. But in this way, by using Octavia to represent string people, they're not some mysterious, super powerful race. The first introduction we have of string people is just somebody who's a really pushy salesman.
That she is. And it's also a fun little talk about alchemy and like the limitations of alchemy and magic. And I think that there's a really cool, subtle little thing here, and I might be overcrediting Pirate. But like the opening of this chapter is a line. Because it was magic, they were able to talk to each other despite being far apart. And then further down below, we get to sort of talking about it's magic. They can do this, they can do that, but that's not an excuse for miracles. And then later on, Octavia talks about how she's not a miracle worker, she's just an alchemist. And then you think about stuff that's been established up till now about how they always talk about the dead gods. The narration in everything involving Liscor's dungeon talks about, like, this cathedral-esque thing that people don't really notice or have the context for, because all that's gone. And I think it is an interesting little way that the narrative is establishing the limitations of magic, but maybe not the limitations of miracles.
Okay, I got nothing because that's crack theory for me because I don't remember thinking about miracles and magic in this way at all during this chapter, but you do you, man. You think deeply. All I remember about this chapter and I loved about the chapter is Stinky Ryoka runs up the high passes and then walks into Teriark's cave and tells him off. That's it. Stinky Ryoka. That's what I loved about this chapter. She's running with a giant stink cloud around her that everything is scared of.
Yeah, fair. And it is something that I think maybe it's hard for me to separate now and reading in retrospect, but it's definitely like, even my first read through, I was thinking a lot about this whole dead gods thing. And people had earlier mentioned, like, that certain religious classes used to exist. And, I'm a huge D&D RPG head, and, just thinking about the what divine magic and how that might work is, and wanting to know but not being able to know. I don't know. It's interesting to me. But yeah, other than that, it is a very funny chapter. Octavia, it might actually low key be best girl. Every scene she's in is pure comedy gold.
It never gets repetitive for some reason. Somehow, her presence just automatically makes everything funnier. I don't know why.
Octavia has the hustle, and Octavia always has this feeling to me, like I look at her and I laugh and I'm like, she never feels fake. She's always authentic. She's always trying to get by. She always needs that money, and I feel it and I believe her. And I think that that help keeps the comedy fresh and not feel like she's repetitive.
There's another aspect of this chapter that I did sort of gloss over when I was reading it before. The Fae, because the significance of the Fae was that it's cool, but I was just laughing too much at Ryoka and all of this stuff. At one point, the Fae are interacting with Ryoka, and one of them literally goes, "Disgusting! It should die!" And she slips on a piece of ice, not a piece of ice, a patch of ice, excuse me. And crashes into the ground and she hurts herself. And I never noticed the fact that the Fae, like, Pirate deliberately stations the Fae as, like, menacing in a way. They're not. It's like a subtle level of. I don't know if it's subtle. Is it subtle?
It's not subtle, and I think that it is playing into sort of a lot of these classical ideas of like the inherent capricious danger of the Fae. It may or may not be personal when they kill you, but they'll do it on a whim either way sometimes. Or because they seem to be relatively low key in this setting, maybe they don't kill you, but they'll definitely fuck you up.
The only thing I did remember when I originally read through it was that Teriark literally says, "Begone, pests," and it works! They run away! Which is, I mean, it's the fucking Fae, and this dude, I love Teriark so much. I really, really do. He's funny, he's like, intelligent and capable, and. They get in, and then eventually, the best scene of this chapter comes up. I mean, we already had some good scenes, but this was just best one. She walks in and she goes like, "You cast a spell on me." And he expects her to like do like he starts acting like she's going to start doing certain things as if it's happened to him 100 million times and he's gonna be like, "Oh, you can't stop me. How'd you do it? What did you bring?" And like she talks about how she broke the spell with willpower and all these things. But the best part is they're both have these like high expectations of what's going to happen, and then Ryoka goes around and says, "I won't do it." And then they have a literal exchange where it goes, "No, yeah, yes, you will. No, I won't. Yes, you will. No, I won't." And then she fucking takes out a book. Her win for this isn't magical, it isn't some giant solution. She takes out the runner's handbook, recites a rule. And throws the book at him and says, "Fuck you. I loved it."
Yeah, and so the little Ryoka asides also haven't completely gone away, and I love this little bit where he's like, he's intimidating, but I hold my ground. I have to answer back. I gotta clap back. I'm Ryoka. I gotta be sassy here. I can throw some shade. They called me the Shade Master. That, no, they didn't. They called me bitch. But it just, I don't know why, but Ryoka's asides here are still pretty much pure gold.
We'll get to why I think Pirate gets punchier later when we get to the author note. But yeah, I think Pirate had certain periods of time where they just get super punchy about stuff, and it's hilarious. I love that Terry straight up goes, "You cannot be serious, do you?" The famous line, "Do you know who I am?" I literally pictured Terry Arc in one of the clutching his purse, going, "What? How dare you?"
And I love her logic too, where like it's just okay, so here's the thing, this was an unmarked delivery. This has an X, Y, and Z for how it works. You have decided to skip that process. Your request is invalid. Oh, and you're being blacklisted now.
I love this part because it's a good representation of Terry Arc's character. He could be a monster. He's a powerful being. He's hiding in the mountains. Clearly, he could like wipe everyone to snot because he banished the Fae and he can fuck with everybody. But here, when confronted with someone who gives him a logical argument, his reaction is to think about it and go, "Yeah, she's right." He's willing to accept that. Okay, he won't say it out loud, but he's willing to rethink his thought, what his actions are, and actually change his behavior. I mean, it's not a small thing to me,
No,
anyway.
especially not for something as old as he is, which in fiction, sort of the traditional way you portray that is people are sedentary and settled in how they want to act. But what I really like about this as well is I always kind of got the feeling that the big imperious Terriarch that we were meeting there was sort of just like him putting on airs. And when he realizes that his big bubble has been metaphorically popped, with one of the funniest visuals in this entire fucking series, which is I just picture this big, imperious, unnaturally handsome, salt and pepper haired half elf, big robes, arms crossed, looking stern, and then just a book flies in from off screen, hits him in the face, and falls to the ground.
Oh God, yeah, I'm still laughing about it to this day. To this day.
It's beautiful. And it's like Ryoka just gets past every ounce of his guard, and he just immediately settles into, nope, yep, fine.
There's a lot of reaction you could have. That was a good impression of how Terry Arc would react. And then they make a deal and she leaves. And he's like, "Come back here! I need you!" And instead of trying to stop her with his clear power, he just like mutters and complains a little bit. And then Ryoko does hear something near the end. And she hears, "Behind me, I hear a roar of fury that sounds almost dot 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 bestial." Wonder what that means. And then she leaves. She's happy. She got one over on Terriarch. She's gonna have money. She's got a letter, a speed potion, which will come into play later, a ring worth 800 gold, and a destination in mind. And Ryoka now has forward momentum in this world and a quest to complete. The protagonist has a quest. What is the thing for the secondary protagonist?
Deuteragonist.
Yes, there we go.
Well, okay, so if she's a, so that comes down to the question of if you think she gets equal billing with Eren or not. I am not a super convinced at this point she should, but I'll give it to her. So yeah, Deuteragonist. It's just like a good funny chapter. I think that there's a lot of fun subtle stuff in it. I could be overthinking a little bit of it.
It might also have been Pirate slipped. Who knows? You never know. Pirate could have slipped. But the author note. So Pirate chats a little bit about being burnt, that they're not burnt out, but they are tired. They're still working a day job. And the line that hits me a little bit is, "But what's keeping me going is the idea that this will bring dividends." Oh, I want to tell Pirate, "Yes, you're gonna make lots of money and people will like you, and then you're gonna hide in a cave like Terry Arc." There is some minor commentary Pirate talks more about writing don't stop just because I've got a job. Here we go. Rebar is the comment that I noticed. I only have one for this one. If you want to take a look through while I chat about this. So there's a comment from Rebar written on May 31st, 2018, about a year after the post of the actual chapter was. And Rebar writes, "You write Ryoka like a bipolar sociopath. She was upset when Siria died," quote, unquote, "but then didn't even bother to talk to her after they rescued her. It's very hard to connect with her as a reader because you write her so inconsistently. Is that deliberate, or do you push the tsundere button depending on mood and then turn her into either an unfeeling machine or a raging psychopath? I'm assuming her refusal to accept her class means she has some kind of human plot armor immunity from our world. As in, we can't be mind controlled, so she can't be either, so that sort of magic doesn't work on her. It's a cop out in a way, in a lot of ways, and disappointing, but her character inconsistency is the real flaw here in terms of how you are writing her." Oh boy.
I have thoughts about this post. First off, I see it. I actually can see where a person might get that idea from. But I think that it is focusing too much on a couple moments with Ryoka. Frankly, she's not a bipolar sociopath. She's a bipolar with significant social anxiety disorders. She's torn up and mourns Saria and desperately pushes to rescue her and then leaves because she's struggles with human interaction and difficult conversations. That's the anxiety kicking in, not sociopathy. I don't want to get onto the second half yet. Do you have anything to say there?
Inkwell writes, April 15, 2027, "Have I ever said that you are the best? Yes? Okay. You're the greatest person I have ever read! Heart, 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 heart. Pirate, that's my one positive comment for you for the year. Moving on."
Oh, this other half of that rebar comment. That thing about how Ryoka's refusal to interact with the class system may be having some kind or variety of effect on how stuff interacts with her. I think that's probably true. You notice that Magnolia's charms were only kind of effective on her and so on. I there's stuff and it's never really outright stated, but I have some ideas about it. That like certain skill-based abilities may not always function with somebody who isn't in the class system itself, but that's really iffy.
There's so many comments here that trash Ryoka a lot. I don't want to read them, but there is one that trashes Eren a little bit too, along with Ryoka, and I feel like, should I read that? All right. Azariti says, May 10th, 2017, "I hated Eren much more given how stubbornly airheaded and ignorant she is towards others, always acting like a whiny, spoiled brat. She is like one of those double standard, superficial, stupid justice freaks I heard and seen so much about. Both Eren and Ryoka are annoying, but at least Ryoka redeems herself a little after being humbled by her friends and even their death, and starting to be a little more to a bit more considerate. Sigh, why can't Torrin just be the MC instead?" I honestly wanted to read that just for that last line because why not? Let's let Torrin be the MC. All right.
Poor
Poor
Torin.
Torrin. All right. 20, chapter 13 of volume 2. Let's move on.
And this one opens up with a deeply, deeply unpleasant cold hamburger. You can eat cold pizza, you can eat cold a lot of things, but a cold hamburger is just sad ground beef.
All right, gird your loins, everybody, because there's going to be a lot of food talk here. Pirate will probably refuse to listen to this, and so will everybody else, but I don't care. We need to discuss the choices Pirate Abba has made when it comes to food in these early chapters. The construction of a burger-like object versus an actual burger. Can we discuss? Actually, no. We should do plot discussion. So, Dragonus, can you do plot discussion before I dive into it?
That isn't really the plot of this. This is Erin has her new inn. She relaxes. She throws together a hamburger, says, "This is good," goes into Liscor, starts cooking them in public, and everybody is shocked and awed for some good reasons and some awful reasons.
And on top of that, we get to meet a few people. Celis is in the chapter. Oh my god, yes, Celis! More Celis, please! We get a little development and we meet a few new characters, especially Hawk, the courier, who is Fluffy Bunny Man. And apparently, Dragnus has a theory about,
I don't have a theory, it's just something about this chapter made me think that Eren was into Hawk. Like, and that could just be Eren's cuteness thing just went off, and I'm misattributing, and I don't think that it holds up, but in that moment there, it seemed like she was interested.
This is one of those chapters where people will point at it and go like 10,000 words and nothing happened.
And they'd be wrong.
Yeah, they'd be wrong. The let me be the kid I was back in middle school who would watch the Gilmore Girls. Okay, so Amy Sherman-Palladino, Gilmore Girls. For those of you who are too young to know, Google it. It's great. But that was a show where they like nothing happened is a normal thing. Like there would an entire episode would be about a cat funeral. And there would be no plot, no tension, no nothing. And people thought that that made the show boring. What they never understood was oftentimes it was about the interaction between the characters and the events themselves going on, and the just hanging out with these funny and entertaining and interesting characters, and how it's slowly evolving the cast around your MC. That's what these chapters are about. That's what slice of life is. And if you don't enjoy slice of life, you're not going to enjoy it. Not every chapter can have a continuation of a plot or it can be like dramatic. It just isn't the thing.
This is one of the things that I think really is what makes web serials powerful, though. You can have chapters that are like, hey, this is going to be a slice of life character study chapter. We set some stuff up and we can explore these characters more because that's kind of what I feel like doing right now. And then because I don't have to limit myself to a streamlined, edited, published novel that has to be physically bound, I can just kind of put out what I want to fucking put out and write what I want to fucking write. And if I want to explore characters in a funny, goofy bit where Eren invents hamburgers, then, I'm just gonna do that.
Before I dig into the food thing, one more, I'm gonna do one more thing. The end of the chapter, of course, does have some drama to it because it's a pirate, and pirate likes to do quite a bit of calm and sometimes hilarious content, and then do a little bit of drama at the end, just as a sort of, because it's a web serial, you need to get people to come back. So it ends on the note of Olsen revealing to Syria that the tomb is a lot bigger. And that the guardians that they fought were lesser guardians, which is horrifying.
The idea that Skinner, and admittedly, part of how Skinner almost took the city is that Skinner cheated. Skinner had a crowd control on the people managing the gates, which meant that his horde could bypass them. That's bad. But he still almost took fucking Lisgor. He's the lesser guardian of the crypts. I want to talk more about the Serious stuff towards the end, if only not to bummer out this very funny beginning and middle chapter.
So, food. Let's talk about food. First off, the concept that mayonnaise did not exist in a world with skills and chefs who gain skills. I'm sorry, what?
Mayo's too basic of a sauce, too basic of a condiment. Like, I could believe that something like ketchup, which is slightly more complicated, but also like what Aaron's reproducing here as modern ketchup is sort of a radical departure from how that sort of tomato sauce would have been made. So that itself makes sense to me. But yeah, God, mayonnaise is too. It is too fundamental and basic.
Even in, I'm from a South Asian country where we don't have, like, nobody had giant ovens. Everything is slow cooked. The idea, like, we don't have mayonnaise in the same way, but people understood that you could create mayonnaise. Like, we just didn't do it because it's not a flavor that everybody loves. And there were alternative ways to use eggs that worked for us. Like, the idea. Human beings on Earth figured this stuff out, and this is the most basic. I know it was invented, I know it was processed, I know it was created, and that somebody. But every step of the way, as I read along, I realized that the world is a has a huge history. The one thing that never gets lost. Okay. I'm gonna finish my thought. The one thing that never gets lost is food, because one of the sayings that I ascribe to a lot is that there's always this question: which lasts longer, the pot roast or the Coliseum? Which do you think will last longer? The pot roast, because everybody makes a pot roast. They will figure out how to make a pot roast. The Coliseum could crumble, humanity would go on, and the pot roast would outlast it.
Probably, but I think that that's a slight overstatement. I believe that given the level of calamity we're told this world has undergone at points in the past, that something as basic as mayonnaise could even have been lost. Frankly, if you told me at some point somebody cast a spell that murdered everybody who knew how to make a specific kind of food, or that that happened on accident, I'd believe it. I don't think it did. I don't think that's what happened here. I think Pirate just has limited cooking knowledge. And I think that it works for the most part.
Functionally speaking, the chapter works fine. It's funny as fuck. I just hated the fact that mayo was the invention. And moreover, there is a depth shown to the skill system here, because you realize that Aaron is able to produce a lot of this without any real knowledge of how to cook. She's just depending on skills to like show her how to do this, right? Because a lot of this, there's no way that an amateur would be able to quickly figure out.
Well, I think there's an interesting way the skill system works here, wherein Aaron has vague knowledge of how this stuff is made from the modern day, and the skill is kind of looking at that and filling in those blanks in a way that it wouldn't for the exact same skill from somebody who wasn't from Earth. Like, there's something about the way the skill system interacts with things that you may have seen or known, but don't personally remember. And I will definitely say that I think that explains and bridges some gaps here. But my big thing, my hill that I will in fact not die on and have already surrendered and somebody else can fucking have it. I believe in the idea that Aaron kind of putting together this fast food thing. The burgers are delicious, very revolutionary. Why are people surprised at the idea of a food cart or a food thing in
I
general?
think it might be a novelty in Lescaur itself.
Maybe, and I don't want to spoil it, but we've seen a very specifically place where gnolls are where this is not a novelty, so.
Here's how I think of it. Food carts are not something that are common, because if you look back at like medieval times, anytime the carts or things come out, it's usually attached to an event of some kind. So a fair, a spring festival, something, harvest festival, something like that, you would bring stuff, or it would be attached to a market where they would sell produce. It wasn't necessarily a place where folks would like sell hawk merchandise that you could eat, like hand foods that could be eaten. I'm sure that's literally what Pyro was thinking, or they weren't thinking at all. I'm just gonna go with everything's a surprise. I don't know. This is not atypical of isekais and portal fantasies, where there's a lot of fudging going on as far as what's available and what's not, and what's surprising and what's not. And yeah, it's fine. I was perfectly fine with it when I first read it, but the mayo thing just fucking bugs me as so much.
Yeah, and like, I mean, it's pirate and food, and I generally defend pirate and food, but this one specific case, it wasn't even the food. I'll let it go. A good, funny chapter otherwise, leading into Erin, like, just losing her shit when she meets a bunny man.
Oh God. Honestly, just the description oh my God, I forgot his name already. I just said his name. How did I forget his name?
Hawk.
Okay, just the way Aaron describes Hawk, and sorry, thinks about Hawk, and the way Celis describes him as like, oh, he's Hawk. He's always around, and he comes in and out, and it's like, okay, when I first read this chapter, I was like, what's going on? What's going on here? Why is he like, he's a rabbit person, and the first thing they mention is that he likes girls who are drakes, and that he's a lot with girls, and Celis is talking about it. What's going on there? Did she hook up with him?
Probably.
Mostly because I was looking for relationship stuff that Pirate never wrote about, but I don't know.
I, like I said, I had this vague idea from the way Aaron reacted that, like, Aaron might have been into Hawk, and then I'm like, oh God, is Aaron gonna turn out to be a furry? Oh Lord, why? And, like, that is its own separate worry. I'm gonna put it as not quite as bad as thinking that Torin will turn into a human and romance Aaron, but on a similar wavelength.
And so I think we're past the fun parts and we can get to the depressing parts. So the
Well, no, there's one funny part
okay.
left. When Aaron sees Hawk and just starts going, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. So that actually, so as funny as that was, that immediately solidified my mental image of Hawk. As like, okay, so Beastkin, rabbit from Winnie the Pooh. Okay, this is much more anthropomorphic than I was picturing.
Okay, I got nothing. He has abs because he's a runner. I got nothing else. He's a rabbit with abs. But to the depressing stuff now. So the first depressing moment is when Aaron sees a girl dressed in ragged clothes. It's another hint at a character that will show up soon enough. And she's described as having red hair, dirty from being unwashed, and she might have been beautiful if she was clean.
And oh, there's a little bit of foreshadowing earlier in this chapter involving her and future events as well that I'm keeping quiet on, but you know exactly what I mean.
It'll come up.
We'll talk about that when we get there. It's just remarking this as something to come back to.
I mean, do you want to talk about what happens with Syria? Because you were gung ho about it.
Oh, well, I don't know. I wasn't so gung ho about it. I just want to definitely talk about it at the end because it is a bit serious. And it's not even the skeletal hand thing. Like, yeah, that's creepy. I can only imagine that a less, or sorry, a more self-aware character, because Saria, God, I just had a moment here. Saria kind of makes me think of like an elven girl, Big Lebowski, sometimes. She's so go with the flow that, like, yeah, she's clearly got bad PTSD here. And it's a horrible moment when she wakes up and almost takes Aaron's fucking head off, just on like accident and instinct.
It's a nice way that Pirate masks the PTSD too, because as soon as you get to the point where like Pirate reveals that she has PTSD and that she's reacting in this way, you immediately get her like recognizing the fact that she can move her hand. A bit of like. And it's strange, like it's creepy and weird, but at the same time, it's, oh my God, she still has a hand.
Yeah, and I guess what I mean is what area Saria is really good at finding positives in life, but also, so if I woke up tomorrow and my hand was now a skeletal hand that moved, I would probably have like the most severe and awkward like case of dysphoria about it. And oh yeah, that's just something Saria sort of accepts. It's cool, she can move her hand. She thought she didn't have a hand anymore. Nice.
And I wonder how much of that is just her coping mechanism and how much of it is like her general demeanor. But you know, we don't really get clarification because we're not in our head, but
And also, I mean, I don't see much of a difference there. Your coping mechanism and your general demeanor are, in truth, kind of the same thing. We are the collection of coping mechanisms we've had to develop to live through our
sure
lives.
enough.
And the more I that like we've known about Saria, the more I think that her copacetic way of being is very much a coping mechanism, but also an embraced life
You want to
philosophy.
talk about the author note since you had a comment on Rebel Galaxy? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it was just cool to me reading through this scene, Pirate talking about Rebel Galaxy. I fucking love that game. I love that game soundtrack. I love that game. That game and Elite Dangerous were the two games that made me start thinking about, hey, I could be a trucker. So that was cool. Apparently, me and Pirate like almost all of the same games.
When does Pirate go from construction to legal issues to the fast food industry?
construction to legal issues to the fast
Yeah, when
food.
does Pyrek do that kind of progression in this chapter? It was.
Oh, no, the last chapter was, or a couple chapters ago, there was stuff about construction and then some legal stuff with Ryoka basically playing lawyer against Terriark. And then into this, we get to Eren bringing the food carts to Liscor, or food vending to Liscor, because, you know.
I want to point something out. Dragnus has not been doing this, but Aaron Martinez, back in the day, on April 16, 2017, put up a link to Top Whack Fiction and set it all up and made it look pretty and got people to vote for Pirate Appa. When are you going to get people to vote for Pirate Appa, mister? I said I would do it 6 months ago.
Well, you know, I've been talking about it on the podcast, and I've noticed that on Top Web Fiction, the fucking Wandering Inn went from like fifth to second. So I like to think I've contributed.
Take the credit for other people's hard work.
I need to start posting it more, but like by the time the chapter's done, I'm just so in the chapter. And God, you know, poor Wandering Inn, it's a little bit, not, poor Practical Guide has been in first place for so long, and it's going to be sad to see it drop down, which is what sort of inevitably happens when a series ends. And it doesn't go away forever. I mean, Worm's been done for like a decade now, and it's still only hovering just outside the top 10.
Hopefully the next piece that Erratic Errata writes will be just as wonderful. Pale Lights, I believe it's called, is coming out.
Yeah, Pale Lights, and I actually am looking way more forward to Pale Lights than I was to Practical Guide by the time it ended, but that's a different episode we have in the works to celebrate that show ending. It's a lot to try and cover at once, so we wanted to try and do something to celebrate when it ended. We're gonna be, I think, maybe a few months late, but we got time.
Yeah, it was a spicy chapter and sorry, spicy episode that we tried to record, and we'll try again. We'll try again.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely a spicy series to discuss, both in a meta sense and in actually discussing story events. But that, you know, like I said, that's neither here nor there.
Oh, here's a comment that I liked. Riescu says that awkward moment when they find the ruins devoid of all life and Torin casually walks out. As the citizens of Liscor bow before their new undead lord and savior, Torin ambles off to go fetch that wood for Eren. You know what? That would be a really great manga. I would read that.
I would totally read light novel about I'm a skeleton sent on a basic quest and I accidentally saved the world. I'm a skeleton sent on a basic wood fetching mission and I accidentally saved the world. I'd read that light novel.
Oh, okay. Here's a nice little note for folks who ask about how Eren levels. Apparently, this was a rule Pirate was following that I didn't know about. So, Mainyan says, "I love reading laid-back chapters like these. I wonder if Eren gained any levels from all those burgers she sold. Also, is this Guardian of the Tombs really a threat? As he has no reason to really leave the tombs, unlike Skinner." Pirate responds, "Crap. I knew I forgot something. What Celis was supposed to mention is that no levels will be gained since Eren's outside her inn. Maybe some XP in the service industry, but..."
Yeah, that makes sense and that's consistent, right? Because you get like it. I think, and I'm gonna put this one out here. If Erin had worked more to advertise that this was for her inn, she might have been able to pick up levels. But because it was a separate project, she didn't really market that well, or like bring attention to her inn, and it was just separate from it totally. It really, what's the word? Didn't count.
Here's the explanation for why Pirate. There's actually a thread that explains why Pirate did not consider Mayo. And I quote, "Anything that takes more of the time than me unscrewing a lid is hard work to me."
What?
Oy vey. Okay. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got for the chapter. Anything for you?
No, I think that's everything.
We promised a discussion topic at the end of the chapter. I mean, the episode.
We always want people to write into us, and it was actually a really good idea from Seth to give people a specific writing topic. So today, I want people to write in and talk about what your favorite food is and how well you think it would sell if Aaron set it up with a cart.
Like what kind of fast food? Assuming she like started a fast food,
Yeah, just like what's your favorite food? What do you like to cook and like how well do you think it would sell? Like
deli chopped cheese or something?
Yeah, if your favorite food is deli chopped cheese, then let us know.
Honestly, I would love to see hear from people to see what kind of food. Like, I know Pyre doesn't love discussing food and clothes and stuff, but for me, on a more serious note, pairings. I need to know at this point in the book, who were you pairing off? Was it Torin with Eren like I was? Or Celis with somebody else or something? Did anybody have ships going at this early in the stages? Did they think Ryoko was going to end up banging Eren? Tell me! Tell me now! All right, that's what I got. Let's hope we get some fun answers. And if we do get some fun answers, we'll try and put them in the episode right after this, whether or not it takes a while to get to us or not. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. I think that's it for now. Yeah, Darkness?
Yeah, I think that's everything. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins. The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at NoKillingGoblin or email us at NoKillingGoblins with an S at gmail.com.